Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and it is The Healthy Mind podcast for February 28th, 2012. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Dr. Zafiridis. The podcast is also on iTunes. And if you have any questions or comments, and thank you, I really do appreciate the emails you're sending, you can email me anytime. And the email is peter@thehealthymind.com. Now, this week on the program, it's a very, very special broadcast, particularly if you or someone you know is struggling with physical pain, chronic pain, because this week I'm going to take the entire show and dedicate it to an interview with really one of the nation's leading experts on mind-body medicine, particularly as it relates to pain. Dr. Howard Schubiner, the author of the very, very popular book and very well-received book, Unlearn Your Pain, joins us for an exclusive interview for the entire broadcast today. So be prepared here. We are going to change minds on how we think about pain. We've talked about this before, and you all know how much I am dedicated to understanding the link between emotions and pain. But we are so fortunate to have Dr. Howard Schubiner with us today. If you know someone who's struggling, make sure you let them know about this particular podcast. It really is important because we are going to talk about pain in a way that you may have never heard of before. And after listening to Dr. Schubiner, you may very well never think about physical pain the same way again. Now, before we go any further, just a little bit of housekeeping. Remember, what we talk about on The Healthy Mind is never intended to be medical advice. It's simply informational. So before you try any treatment approach or supplement or anything, whatever it may be, use good common sense. Make sure that you're always talking to your healthcare professional before you start anything, okay? Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is so wonderful to have my next guest on the program. I've known Howard for several years now, Dr. Schubiner, and it really is a privilege for us to have him on The Healthy Mind. I know that I've talked to you about him on the program. We've mentioned his book a few times and the entire field of medicine that is growing within mind, body, and also specifically within the area of pain and what we really think we know about pain and what really is perhaps the proper treatment for pain. Dr. Schubiner has a book called Unlearn Your Pain, and I could not recommend this more. It is a regular part of my treatment when patients come to me for treatment of pain and emotional disorders. He has been trained under probably the godfather in the field of the emotional aspects of pain, or how emotions can cause pain. And you know that this is near and dear to my heart, as I've said on various programs. But a little bit about Dr. Schubiner. He is a pediatrician at heart, board certified in pediatrics as well as internal medicine. He's the founder and director of the Mind Body Medicine Program at Providence Hospital in Michigan. Now, he was teaching as well, a full professor at Wayne State University in Michigan for nearly 20 years, and is a national expert not only in mind-body pain, but also in ADHD, and has given hundreds of scientific lectures. He has over 60 publications in print and the author of Unlearn Your Pain. He has been doing this program for several years, and where this is different from maybe other things that you'll read with regards to the treatment of pain and the treatment of mind body, and where this is so special and why I have so much respect for Dr. Schubner, is that he has the research behind it as well, published research to show that his program and the treatment of what he believes in actually works. So when we are looking for the proper treatment of pain that may go outside of what Western medicine, if you will, tells us is the right treatment, Dr. Schubner also has the research to back it up. So with that in mind, I'd like to welcome Dr. Schubner to the program. Howard, thank you so much for coming on to The Healthy Mind today.
You are so kind, Peter. My mother couldn't have done a better job. That introduction.
Well, I really mean it, and it really is important that people just have an idea of who you are and your passion, and also, and I think just as important, if not more important, the research that's behind this as well, because people are vulnerable when they are struggling with all different types of physical symptoms and pain, and it is just good to know that there is research behind your method. What I wanted to do, though, is just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to the mind-body syndrome and pain, and your story of how you've gotten to this point.
This has been a journey. I have often thought that it would have been nice if I'd started this work when I was 30 rather than 50, but I'm not sure I would have been ready for it.
Sure.
It's been fascinating. You know, as you said, I started as a physician, internal medicine doctor, and worked in adolescence and worked ADHD, taught at the university, did research in other fields. And when I was in my 40s, I stood in mindfulness meditation more as a person for personal use. And then I became a teacher of that. And when I found out about this simple yet revolutionary concept that pain, real pain, real severe pain, chronic pain, can be caused by stress and unresolved emotions, I was floored. Sure. That was not part of our medical training. And when I saw people getting better with sometimes even minimal interventions, once they understood that simple concept, it just changed my view of medicine, and I just plunged headlong into this field.
Yeah, that's incredible. At that time, were you doing both adult and pediatric medicine, or was it principally you were doing internal medicine? When was that in your career?
I was doing more adult medicine and adolescent medicine at that time.
I see. And so you began to see this. What happened next for you?
Well, I just started delving into the research, being a good academician. Started delving into the research, looking at the connection between the mind and the body. Started developing a program. Started applying some of the techniques that I learned over the course of many years being a physician, including mindfulness meditation, therapeutic writing, learning to deal better with emotions, and just kind of put it all together into a program that I thought might be useful. And then I tried it and some research, as you mentioned, in fibromyalgia.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for those that are listening, what we're talking about here is everyone knows that the emotions themselves can make us feel worse when we're having physical symptoms. But that's not what we're speaking about here. And I want Dr. Schubner to talk a little bit more about that. But what we're principally talking about here is the emotions themselves almost being the originator or the catalyst for having the physical symptoms. Isn't that right?
Yeah, there's a amazing study from Derbyshire in Pittsburgh where they showed that the brain can create pain. And when you look at neurologic studies, you realize that the brain can actually create pain. And it shouldn't be that surprising, because we know if you get stressed, your hands may get sweaty, your mouth may get dry, your heart rate may speed up. All those things are physical reactions to stress and emotions.
Sure.
So everyone understands that. But what I think medicine has not really understood is that when emotions build up to a level at which someone feels particularly trapped or helpless or powerless, the body can serve as a warning device, in a sense, as the body talks. And if you have a stressful day and you get a headache, you say, oh, it was a stressful day. But when someone comes into you with 17 years of headache, could that have possibly originated from stress and unresolved emotions?
Yes.
It turns out it can, and it frequently does.
It's incredible. But I'm sure you've encountered this as I have. It's very, very hard, even in those who have been told that we really can't find a reason for why you're in pain, to take it to that next step, to say maybe the emotions could be the culprit here, without them feeling as if there's something wrong with them, or they put up a barrier and say, well, I'm not crazy. Why are you telling me that I'm making this up? How do you get through that resistance with the folks that you see?
Yeah, it's really important. The first thing is to resonate with the patient, to become in tune with them, listen to them, to have them understand that you are on their side, that you hear theirs. Chronic pain is horrible. It takes over your life. It ruins your life. You see, as a doctor after doctor after doctor, they feel like they're a chronic pain patient rather than a human being.
That's really
so it starts with that empathy. And then it goes to education. What people don't understand, and most doctors don't understand, that symptoms, any symptom, including pain, anxiety, fatigue, is generally caused by two things, either a tissue damage problem or a nerve pathway problem. And a tissue damage problem, everyone knows, all doctors know how to look for those. But as you pointed out, with fibromyalgia, with chronic headaches, with most back pain and neck pain, irritable bowel and irritable bladder, there is no pathologic tissue disease process in the body causes symptoms, those very real symptoms. And so doctors are at a loss to explain them. But when you understand what a nerve pathway is and how nerve pathways can be the source of these symptoms, now all of a sudden you realize that, oh, here's a neurologic explanation. I started an internship. I had diarrhea for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I didn't have a disease in my colon or my bowel. It was the nerve pathway. And so when you learn how to ride a bike when you're a kid, and you can ride a bike later, that's a nerve path. How we sign a name, how we the foods we like, the colors we like. These are all nerve pathways. In other words, thousands and thousands of nerve cells all connected to create something. And once people understand that nerve pathways can cause pain, then we can realize that if someone has stomach pain and we're trying to treat the stomach, if there's no disease in the stomach, we're looking in the wrong place. We're not identifying the source and the root cause of the pain. So we can't expect to get rid of it. We can only expect to treat it symptomatically.
I see. Yes, and I think that's a really nice way of understanding that. If we can begin to see that part of what, let's say, pain is a whole lot of talking of a lot of nerves, and one of the origins might be, ouch, I just hurt myself, or I cut myself, and it hurts. I think it's easier for people, at least in a visual sense, to say, okay, one of those inputs could be our emotions, and maybe the entire input might be our emotions.
Right. What happens is that pain becomes learned from an injury, oftentimes. So there's a story I have in my book about a Vietnam vet who was injured with shrapnel in his leg.
Yes.
In Vietnam. And he had pain in that leg and limping in that leg. Came home, healed up, and he was fine. No limping. And then 10 or 15 years later, he could get pain and limping. And this would be triggered by the sound of a helicopter.
Isn't that incredible?
The helicopter occurred at the time he was injured, which was an ambush and a very gory and deadly scene. And so the leg wasn't diseased, but the nerve pathway had been learned by the brain, because nerve pathways last forever once they're learned. Pain had been learned and then reactivated 10, 20 years later by a stimulus that had an attachment to an emotion. And that is totally amazing.
Yeah, that is, it just shows you how much we don't know about how our body reacts, even to the most subtle cues. Many times I will use an example not on the same exact level, but that we are activated every single day to behave in certain ways just by watching a program or listening, or not even listening, flipping through a magazine. Madison Avenue has figured exactly how to cause us to act in a certain way, even if we're not aware of what is happening. Because, you know, as I use that example, because it's practical, to buy something in the form of advertising is an action. And oftentimes we don't even need to be activated to be able to do that, or at least that we're aware of it. And I think in the same way, if we understand the way the pain is working, sometimes some of these cues that come at us, like the individual that you had just mentioned, the Vietnam War vet, might not even realize that that's where it was coming from. But for him, the action was pain rather than whatever other behavior it may be. So it's happening to us all the time. And I think people can understand, as you gave an earlier example, I'm under stress, I have diarrhea, or if I have a headache. And it's not as if the pain is not real, but what we're talking about is at least where it's coming from, the initial part of the pathway is the emotion, I think is what you're trying to say.
Right. What people don't understand, and I didn't understand before I got into this, is that 95% of the brain function is subconscious. Mm. In other, and 95% of our thoughts and feelings are subconscious. In other words, they occur without our awareness of them. The subconscious part of the brain controls the body. So we don't have to tell our bladder to squeeze. You know, the subconscious brain does that. We don't have to tell our heart to speed it up. We exercise, done automatically. And these subconscious processes are what's responsible for symptoms that occur in our body. And the subconscious responds to the danger signal. So the way we were created or evolved, depending on how you look at it, is that the subconscious mind is scanning the world for danger all the time. And when a danger occurs, the body reacts. That's how we are programmed. The body reacts because if there's a physical threat, the body reacts to protect and have us escape, or fight or flight, as you know. But it turns out that a physical threat, the way that's handled in the brain, is the same way that an emotional threat is handled in the brain. So an emotional insult or physical injury go through the same exact pathways, the same parts of the brain are activated, the amygdala, the anterior cingulate cortex, and the autonomic nervous system, which can and frequently does produce responses in the body. And that, when people understand that, they can begin to see that these kinds of insults that occur in our life, or these kinds of situations that trigger this danger signal, are almost guaranteed to affect the body in some way, shape, or form.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. And we, for good reason, that the emotions would override, let's say, the logic, because if, at least back a few million years ago, you didn't really have time to worry about thinking about how to get out of the way of the saber-toothed tiger. You just had to go, I guess. And I guess in today's world, we may not have those immediate threats, but our body doesn't know the difference. And in that, we'll react to emotion because it is protective.
Exactly. And it's not only the current emotion, but just as we have pain memories, nerve pathways that are pain memories that I spoke of earlier, we have nerve pathways that are memories of how to do something, like how to swing a golf club. Once you've learned that, you always remember that.
Yes.
But we also have emotional memories, and emotional memories are forever. And so the typical paradigm of what we see is that someone in earlier in life would have some kind of physical injury or emotional injury. Let's go with the emotional injury now, whereas the typical story I tell is about a woman who was yelled at by her father as a child.
Yes.
Consistently and persistently yelled at as a child. Her emotional memory was being yelled at means being powerless, being weak, being angry, resentful, and afraid. And she grows up, and when she's 35 years old, she's in a situation where she gets a new boss and she's trapped in that job. She has to work in that job. And her new boss is the kind of person who starts yelling at her over and over and over again. And she develops headaches. Her body has remembered the emotional memory. Her brain has the emotional memory of the past. And now this is being triggered in the present. So it's a double whammy. And that is why she developed this severe pain. And the pain is a warning signal. It's a danger signal the body is giving us. The body talks. And the problem is that once that symptom started, even though she left the job a few months later, that pain pathway had become learned and become like a rut and become ingrained. And her pain continued for 17 years.
That's amazing. How
that much? Is, you know, it's amazing. It just, but she could change it because the brain is neuroplastic. The brain changes. So when you learn how to play the violin, your brain changes. When you get treatment for spider phobia, is a great article on this, your brain changes. When you develop pain or fatigue, your brain changes. And so the brain has the ability to learn new pathways, and it can learn new healthy pathways just as well as it can learn new unhealthy or painful pathways.
Well, and I think that's where you had come to, both in terms of your formative training and before you had gone to form what you have developed at Providence Hospital, and also the program that you have through your book on Unlearn Your Pain. But I want to go back for just a moment. You had said that the emotions are activated, particularly in the young woman that you had just mentioned with fibromyalgia, but the emotions are activated, and because of that, she gets the pain. Now, for those who may be listening for the first time to this type of topic, can you talk a little bit about that? How does it go from the emotions being activated, a memory in the past of, in this case, her father yelling at her? Why is it that pain happens? What is that process? Why do we get pain then if it's an emotion that is upsetting?
Yeah, it's a really good and interesting question. I think there's two levels to it. One level is how it works. And what happens neurologically in the brain is that, as I mentioned, this danger signal is activated in the amygdala, which triggers part of the brain called the anterior cingulate cortex and the autonomic nervous system. The autonomic nervous system sends it activates muscles, nerve fibers, GI fibers, cardiovascular fibers. The autonomic nervous system is connected to every cell and fiber of the body. And so if you have muscle activation, the autonomic nervous system can produce muscle activation in the muscle on the end of the thigh, or the muscles of the lower, or the muscles of the head causing tension headaches, or the muscles of the neck causing neck pain. Okay. It is very specific. And so from a neurologic point of view, it's very clear how emotions can trigger autonomic nervous system pathways to produce this pain. The pain is real. I think you know that, everyone knows that, all pain is real. It's not just pain in the brain. It is also that the muscles are going into spasm. The muscles are. And sometimes what happens is that practitioners like chiropractors or massage therapists say, oh, the problem is you have tense muscles, so we'll relax your muscles, we'll adjust your spine.
Yes.
Which is fine, but that's the end result. That's not the root cause. And the tension will keep recurring until you treat the underlying cause. And so that's how it happens neurologically. Why pain? That we don't understand quite as well, but pain is a warning signal. Pain is the conscious representation of a danger. When you, it's a conscious awareness that something's amiss and you have to do something to protect yourself.
Okay.
So if you're walking across the savannah and you twist your ankle, you break your ankle, the pain that occurs consciously is a sign to you of a danger sign to say, do something, rest, withdraw, don't keep walking on that ankle. And in the case of psychophysiologic disorders, it's a sign, if you interpret it correctly, if you understand what it means, and that's the hard part, because we get pain and we immediately assume that there's something wrong in the body. And that may be the case. That's why medical workups, medical testing is critical. But if there's nothing wrong in the body and you're having pain, then it's a warning signal that tells you have to take stock of what's going on in your life, because something needs to change.
Isn't that amazing? And it's just such a beautiful way of describing that, because I think people can relate beyond just the fact that you have a pain, say in the case of upset stomach or a headache, you do have to stop for a moment. Or if somebody hits you or you bump into something or you get cut, the pain doesn't just serve to say something is wrong, but it forces you to say, wait, what just happened and what can I or can't I not do next? And what you're saying is, with the emotions, instead of, say, a knife cutting you or something falling on your hand, it is a memory or some type of emotion that will serve as that purpose and say, hey, Peter, wait a minute, take a step back. This is telling you something. And instead of it just being a physical thing that is causing it, it is the emotions can do it just as well. Do I have that about right?
Yeah, I was talking to a lady the other day. And she said, I was examining her hands, and she said, you know, it's funny that every time I drive to my mom's house, I feel my hands gripping the wheel. And by the time I get to my mom's house, my hands are aching. I have severe pain in my hands. And so I said, well, tell me about your mom. You know, what's going on with that? And it turns out that there was a significant amount of conflict and resentment between her and her mom. And the sign, her hands being hurt and her hand fist clenching, it's a sign that there was an emotion there. She had resentment.
Yes.
And she, you know, she had no idea that that was going on. She said, well, geez, my hands hurt when I drive to my mom's. They don't hurt at other times. What could that possibly be? But when you think about it logically, you say, oh, makes perfect sense. I saw there was a celebrity on TV a while ago who had severe migraine headaches and was talking on the Today Show about her migraine headaches. She said, sometimes migraine headaches are so severe, I can't even go to family functions. And I thought, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So they're saying that they had a headache, but it was a family issue. So there you go. Clearly, the headache served as a kind of a symbol or a signal to say, yes, it's about my family.
Right. When you listen carefully, that's the thing about modern medicine, biotechnological medicine, it tends to be reflexive. You have this pain, take this medication. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen patients who they say, well, they wait 2 months to see the doctor, and he examines them for 5 minutes and says, oh, it's this, do this. But they haven't really heard the story. And in this arena, it's not a body part that we're treating, it's the person. And if you're treating the whole person, you can't understand that person without listening to their story and without hearing these things. And if you don't listen to that, you'll never get to the diagnosis. You'll never get to these areas. I was talking yesterday to a doctor who I had seen, a doctor who I had seen a patient that he had seen. So he saw this patient a few years earlier, and it was a young man who had a groin pain. So he's a urologist, so he goes to the doctor and says, I have groin pain. The urologist says, well, when did it start? Well, it came out of the blue. It started yesterday, you know, 2 weeks ago. Okay, let me examine you. I don't find anything, so it's probably nothing. And then the pain keeps coming, and he says, then he comes back, and then he ends up having a surgery. And then, but that doesn't help the pain. And then he goes to another urologist, and then he has another surgery, but that doesn't help the pain. And then he goes to another urologist, and then he has another. Now this young man has had three surgeries in a private area, and he doesn't want to have surgery. And,
sure.
And the pain is not getting better. The pain is getting worse. And I was talking to the first urologist who saw him, and I was telling him that the guy had come to see me, and now his pain is gone. And what did I do? I listened to him. I listened to his story. And it's not that complicated to put two and two together. What was going on in his life when the pain started? It turned out it was an issue with his wife. And that issue with his wife was incredibly intense, and I'm not going to go into details about it now, but something that was overwhelming. And, you know, I said to the patient at one point, I said, you know, what you've been through, it's kind of like getting kicked in the nuts.
Yes.
Goes, yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And there you go. The body represents it in that way.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's
we listen to people, we'll never hear these stories. But you know, from a medical point of view, it's cost effective. You know, if this young man had how many surgeries, how many doctor visits, how many prescriptions for pain medications, how much money did he spend over the and how much suffering for 3 years of this severe pain, And even though it would take me longer than 5 minutes to get the story, that time saves a tremendous amount of money when you see that these kinds of interventions are incredibly cheap.
No,
they're not technological interventions.
Yeah, and that's absolutely a critical point, because if anything is going to get the ears of those in healthcare, it would be the dollar signs, and at least in those that are in charge of the purse strings, because that is a very important point. Why are we not taking the time to listen to our patients, to those who are coming in for care? And just the critical importance of that, and I think you've talked about this before, newer studies have been out there as well, saying, hold on a second, even what we think we know within medicine about, let's say, what we see on an MRI or on a CAT scan about an injury, isn't any proof that that is where the pain or suffering is coming from. Just as recently as last week on a study that was there, and I brought that up on the show a week ago with regards to hip pain, and where they had taken about 70 individuals with no pain at all, and in about 70% of them, they had found the similar types of pathology on the MRI that another doctor or a pain doctor or a surgeon will look at and say, yes, here is an injury, this is where your pain is coming from. None of these people had pain. So what exactly are we even doing? And for those, it's frustrating at times. I'm sure that you have also seen it, being that this is your passion and your area of both research and practice. Why is there so much resistance to this? Or why is it looked at as if, well, that's a great theory, but this isn't really the cause of pain, not only in our patients, but also in the medical community? Why do you think that there's so much resistance in that?
I think what's happened is that the biotechnological approach to medicine has ascended. It's gained incredible cachet since World War II, basically, because of tremendous advancements.
Yes.
And these advancements have come by looking closer and closer in more detail at the micro level, looking at the cellular level, the genetic level, looking for what causes cancer and what are the cell mechanisms that we can use to treat it, and diabetes and heart disease and stroke and infectious disease. We've made tremendous progress in that area. And the problem is that when you apply that technology, that kind of approach to a whole body problem, a mind-body problem, to chronic pain, which is not for the most part, a physically based problem, we're missing the boat. So we're not looking at the whole person. We're missing the forest for the trees. And so when we apply that approach to pain, we're treating the pain as if we can figure out what's causing it on the micro level in the body. And that's not where the problem is. We're looking in the wrong place. Yeah. And so this medical cultural phenomenon is all heading in one direction. But there's a few of us who are realizing, wait a minute, this isn't working. It's clearly not working. There's ample evidence to show that despite more and more back pain treatments, more and more surgery, more and more injections and opiates, back pain is getting worse in this country. This pain and disability is increasing. And we're spending upwards of more than $80 billion a year on just back pain alone. So it's not working. And there's a few of us that are saying, wait a minute, maybe there's a better way. And what happens in all medical revolutions, from learning how to, deciding that you needed to wash your hands, to the fact that the earth is round, there was always a few people at the forefront said, wait a minute, there's another way. We can have to look at it a different way. And gradually enough people will begin to see that. And then all of a sudden people will say, oh yeah, we knew that all the time.
All the time, right? Yes. Why don't tell us something we didn't already know. Tell us a little bit just about your journey and those that have influenced you to have gotten to the point of where you're at with your own program and your own approach here. How has that come to pass?
As I mentioned earlier, I started on this path through mindfulness meditation. Yes. So I have my mindfulness meditation teachers were Jon Kabat-Zinn and Saki Santarelli, Melissa Blacker, Alana Rosenbaum. So I had great meditation teachers, and I started teaching meditation about 12 or so years ago. And then Dr. Sarno influenced me greatly. He was at the forefront of this movement back in the 1970s and 80s. He's written a lot of influential books, and he's probably cured hundreds of thousands of people over the million books that he sold. So there's a lot of people out there who really do understand this.
Yes.
And then there's a lot of scientists that I respect greatly. Joseph Ledoux, who you sent an article about this morning, I think. Daniel Wegener, Timothy Wilson, scientists who were at the forefront of mind and body and the neurologic science that I think I really tried to infuse neurologic science into my program. James Pennebaker, a great influence in terms of therapeutic writing. And then the type of emotional work that I've been doing in the last several months from Habib Davinlou and Alan Abbas in Canada. So I think those are my main influences. It's just wonderful to be part of feel like you're part of a scientific chain where each person builds on the next, and you can take all other people's work and take it to levels and apply it in ways which can really help people.
Yeah, it really sounds like a beautiful mix there, and a culmination, if you will, to where you're at of not just traditional Western med, but a lot of Eastern influence there as well. And of course, Dr. Sarno. And this is where it's important, ladies and gentlemen, in terms of specific to Dr. Schubner here, and I don't mean to embarrass you, Howard, when I say this, but if we look at his book, Unlearn Your Pain, and understand where his influences have come, it is a mixture both of traditional medicine, Western medicine, but also going back into the psychological, the emotional, the spiritual as well. It is really important to understand that as you think about your pain and the things that you are struggling with physically. No one is trying to convince you here to consider anything than what is the complete part of why we get ill. Not just the physical, the end result, but how do we authentically, with compassion, look at ourselves and say, what are some of the emotional reasons that I might be feeling the way I am for any illness? This isn't just pain. It could be for a flu or any kind of thing that you're struggling with. We understand the physical, but it is important for us to take a look at the emotional as well. And when we say emotional, the reflex for everyone shouldn't be emotional. I'm not crazy. There's not something wrong with me. But more of a compassion to say, where am I hurting? What has been lacking in my life? Or what is happening when I feel pain, when I am hurting, when I am sick? Because to not look at it that way is not going to get you to the health that you need. And we're not trying here in any way to criticize or minimize Western medicine. Howard's absolutely right in the advances that have moved forward in the last 50 years that have greatly improved our quality of life. But even the greatest advances, when we're not looking at the entire part of the human condition, is going to leave people suffering. And I think that that's where it's so important, where Dr. Schubner comes at this with a wealth of experience and puts together this program in Unlearn Your Pain, his book. And I want to talk a little bit about the book as well and talk a little further about the program and specifically with Unlearn Your Pain in the 28-day program, and then talking a little bit about the research that you've done that has been published in its efficacy to validate it as well.
Right. The way I think of it is there's three parts to the program: educational, behavioral, and emotional. The educational component of the program starts with a good medical assessment, reviewing the testing, reviewing their workup, reviewing their medical history in detail, and making sure that we're not missing a physical tissue disease, structural, pathological type of process, for which traditional biomedical therapy is necessary. So it first starts with understanding what the problem is. If the problem is a nerve pathway problem, a mind-body problem, a psychophysiologic problem, the ones that I specialize in, then it's helping the patient understand that, understand what it is, why they got it, how they got it, what it's doing in their brain and in their body, and to normalize it and destigmatize it so they don't feel, as you said, that they're crazy or incompetent or weak, but they're just human. They're a human person caught in a variety of circumstances that created this situation, number one. And number two, that they can get out of it. That there is hope there, and if they have confidence that they can do this, there's a very high likelihood, and I'll tell you the statistics that we have in a minute, that they will get out of it. So that's the first step, is the assessment and the education. Second step is behavioral. In other words, helping people to begin to act as if they're healthy. Mm-hmm. Start acting healthy. Start moving their body little by little. Start exercising little by little. Start eating the foods that they thought were causing them to be sick, and doing it in a way that is reprogramming their brain to stop the reactions that have been caused. In other words, and this sounds silly, but it's a lot of self-talk, telling themselves that they are healthy, that they are strong, they can do this, it won't hurt me. And that changes the brain chemistry in ways to allow them to begin to do these activities.
Yes.
Because if the activity, I wouldn't tell somebody with a broken ankle to walk on it.
Sure.
Because you would tissue damage. But if someone has ankle pain due to a psychophysiologic disorder, I want them to walk on it. I want them to break those nerve pathways, not break them, but develop new nerve pathways that are not pain. So that's the second part, behavioral. And the third part is emotional. And we can talk more about that if you want, but it's a variety of emotional work, therapeutic writing work, verbal expression work. I'm interested in this type of therapy called intensive short-term dynamic psychotherapy.
Yes.
To help people get in touch with their emotions, express their emotions, resolve them, and let them go. And so those three components are really the essence of how people can get better in this for these types of disorders.
Sure. And when you say therapy, that it's not to imply that someone needs to go to psychotherapy to get treatment for their pain.
Correct.
Yeah.
Some people do, and therapy is a good thing for many people, but it's not absolutely necessary, definitely not. The program that I've put together is pretty much self-guided. I run the program in Michigan as well so that people can come and I work with them and guide them through a process that includes emotional work, behavioral work, and the education of it.
Yeah, it's interesting as you were talking and mentioning those three pillars. I was reminded of someone I had seen just the week before. There was an individual with hip pain, and very, very, very dedicated woman, had to raise her children on her own. And when she came in and talked, all the time it was about how she was able to survive and always figured out a way. But what was there was never a time where anyone had helped her. She had been raising her children on her own and could never reached out for help. Well, she's lost a job recently and is quite alone, but really wanted, needs someone just to say, I get it. You have succeeded, and it is very, very difficult, her road, and the hip pain is bad, and I'm trying to get her to understand the emotional part of that. But I thought, as she said, I know this pain in my hip is because of the arthritis. And the amazing part that the thought can have on making that real in that way, and how much work has to be done to say, and I think this is where maybe some of the psychotherapy, for lack of a better word, comes in, or the self-talk, is how do you stop that for a moment and say, part of it may not be that it is my arthritis, that if I automatically go there and fulfill it in that way, well, I don't have any room to consider some of these other options or the stress. So it does involve the biology, of course, the emotion, but the self-talk as well. And it's amazing what our thoughts can do and really fulfill it in that way. As we talked about it a little bit more, where she understood that it was okay to say, hey, I'm hurting. I might need some help. When I had done that the previous visit, when she came in the other day, she changed it on her own. She said, I went for the MRI and I knew what it was going to be. Negative. Now, I really had just talked very kindly to her. We didn't necessarily go into this process full on or showed her how to shift that thought. But because she gave herself a little bit of permission, she knew then, just as she knew before, that now this time it wasn't. There wasn't anything there in her hip. And, of course, the MRI was negative. But her pain had lessened with nothing different. And it's amazing how we really think the more we learn about pain, the less we know. Right. It's overwhelming at times when you think about that.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying. The people that I see, they've tended to have gone through so many different types of treatments, so many different doctors that hasn't worked. And when they hear about the idea of nerve pathways and they begin to look at their lives and begin to see the connections between life events
yes.
and the onset of their painful syndromes, they go, this makes perfect sense.
Yes,
it makes perfect sense. It explains it. Even I'm seeing a teenager this week, a 17-year-old young man who's had severe pain for about 3 or 4 years now. And he was just reading some of the materials that I provided him. And he said to his mom, this is the first doctor that understands me.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't met him yet. This is the first doctor who understands what I'm going through. And I'm really excited to see this doctor, even though she told me he wasn't very excited to see a lot of doctors because sure. it's just one more doctor, one more thing that hasn't worked. So I think we're really on the cusp of making a breakthrough and helping people understand this concept. And when people really understand it, the amount of healing and positive energy that can occur is amazing. 60% of the variance in how much people get better in routine doctor visits is related to the relationship between the doctor and the patient.
Isn't that
60%.
Incredible.
This is across all visits. And so what we do and how we treat people is critically important. Like as you pointed out, not only in psychophysiologic disorders or mind-body disorders, but also in more physically based disorders as well.
Yeah, it's so important. It's humbling from the physician standpoint in that how much as a profession we have to realize this and how important it isn't just bedside manner for the sake of bedside manner, but the fact that our interactions with our patients, those that we care for, just the interaction is where so much of the healing occurs. And you worry in an age of insurance panels, prior authorizations, all of this, that it becomes more and more impersonal. And it's a tough loop, because then part of that healing never has a chance to occur. And both the patient and the physician get frustrated. But more importantly, and I think so fulfilling, is that there's hope here. When to those that are listening here, what we're talking about, if we understand this, in the emotions causing pain, in the role of the mind as it relates to physical illness, and this is why I talk about it here in terms of my tagline. It's not just the tagline. I really believe this. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. In what is done here, as Dr. Schubner does it, as others in the field do it, as I do it, what we're calling on is the individual's ability to heal. But in that, you do have that ability. Sure, we will help in the sense of helping to guide and giving a context as to why this is happening. But how you improve is because you improve. And that really means that there's unbelievable potential within you to heal. And I think that that's important every day for people to understand that. It's important because in my practice, at least within psychiatry, people come in and they feel so weak that they have to come in and see me, but they carve out lives despite the way that they are feeling. And that is pure strength and potential. It's easy to get through life when it's going well. But the people that I see that motivate me to continue on and enthuse me are those that struggle yet dare to continue on forward in their lives. And it is so exciting with something like this along the psychophysiologic disorders to understand, wow, this potential, the healing that's going to come is going to come from within me, not necessarily something that is external. And it is very, very hopeful here. Not that everything is going to be explained by a psychophysiologic process, but to not acknowledge that at all is not fair. But that really is so hopeful and exciting because it taps into the individual's capability, into the individual's strength. And that is just so very exciting.
What I simply say to my patients is that, again, I'm treating primarily or solely psychophysiologic disorders, that the typical model is you've got pain, you've got chronic pain, you've been broken, bad things have happened to you, and you're broken. And you go to a doctor and you expect the doctor to have the answer, to have the cure, to have the fix, and then you'll get better. So there's a story here, and the hero of that story is the doctor. But that doesn't work for these types of problems because the doctors don't have the fix for certain, you know, for certain infectious diseases. The doctors do have the fix, yes. And that's great. But for these psychophysiologic disorders, these mind-body disorders, like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, irritable bowel, irritable bladder, tension headaches, migraine headaches, most neck and back pain, TMJ pain, insomnia, etc., the story has to be different. The story is, bad things have happened to you. You're in pain. You've been broken. And the hero of the story is you. The patient is the hero of the story because the hero is someone who pulls on their resources, who gets help, and I can offer them a path to healing, but they have to be the ones to do the healing. And when they see themselves as the hero of the story, as overcoming obstacles, that's when they are able to achieve success. That's when they are able to reduce or eliminate their pain. And when you see that, both of us, myself and the patient, are totally in awe at just what you were talking about, yes. This inner strength that people can have.
It's incredible, and it's within all of us. It really is. To those of you who are listening and are wondering, it is there. It is within you. I emphasize it almost every show in terms of the power and the strength that is within you. It is so important for you not to doubt it. It just is. It's just so critical. And like you, I am amazed when I get a chance to witness that as often as I do. I wanted to go back, if I could, just a little bit with regards to Unlearn Your Pain and the research that you had done. If you could let our audience know in terms of how that was set up, and really the fact this is a published study that's out there.
Yeah, so we published one study. It's published in the Journal of General Internal Medicine in 2010. It was a randomized controlled trial of patients with fibromyalgia, women with fibromyalgia, and we randomized them to this Unlearn Your Pain program versus a waitlist control group. And fibromyalgia is a notoriously difficult disorder to treat. The published studies show that the vast majority of people do not get better. And as expected in the control group, nobody had significant reductions of pain, not a single patient. In the intervention group, approximately 25% of the patients after a one-month program, and this was sustained pain relief at 6 months later, 25% had virtually no pain, wow. Pain levels of one or zero or one. Pretty amazing.
That's incredible.
Another 25% or so had reductions, that was dramatic reductions in pain. Another 25% or so had significant, more than 30% reductions in pain. And so we were buoyed by that. We now have an NIH-funded grant, a $3 million grant, to do a larger study with my colleagues at Wayne State University and the University of Michigan to compare this type of emotional therapy to a cognitive behavioral therapy arm to a control group arm. And so this research is ongoing. And the data that I have from my program, the outcome data that's going to be published soon, when you take people coming to my program with chronic pain for an average of 9 years duration, average pain of 9 years,
wow.
It's horrible and chronic pain. What we found at a six-month follow-up, again, it's a one-month program, but six-month follow-up, so it's sustained pain reduction. 2/3 of those patients had at least a 30% drop in pain, and over 50% had a more than 50% reduction in pain, sustained pain.
That is just
sustained pain reduction. So it is truly amazing, and it shows that large changes can happen to people even if they've had chronic pain for 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Well, and that goes back to what you had said just earlier here at the beginning of the program, that these are nerve pathways, but these nerve pathways can be changed. And they're changed by various things, including the program that you've done and the research that validates it. This isn't just about doing the program as you're doing it in Unlearn Your Pain, but this continues. And beyond the fact that that's wonderful for people to know that it is sustainable, it makes you really, first off, question in terms of what really is healing, where does it really come from, but the fact that, yes, this is a longer-term change that has to be physiologic in the way that it continues, because the pain stops or it reduces. Something has happened at the level of those nerves so that pain isn't being felt. This pain is very, very real. You and I both know that. The pain that we're talking about here in psychophysiologic disorders or mind-body syndrome is very, very real. And by doing this type of intervention, it is changing the physical. It really is amazing.
Exactly. It's changing the brain. It's changing the body. And once you learn new nerve pathways, you're less likely to fall back into those old ruts.
Incredible.
The more you're not in pain, the less likely you are going to be in pain going forward, because those nerve pathways are the ones which you are now practicing. It's like changing a habit. It's like stopping smoking, or learning a new way of hitting a forehand in tennis. Once you learn it, you keep practicing it, and then
it just continues.
It just continues.
It just continues. Wow, it's just an incredible, incredible discussion here. If people want to learn more about you, about Unlearn Your Pain, what's the best way for them to reach out or to contact you? How can they get more information about everything that you're doing?
Yes, thanks. My website is unlearnyourpain.com. And my email address is on there. I answer all my email. And I welcome people to engage in this process because, like I say, the only thing you have to lose is your pain.
No, it's absolutely right. I, ladies and gentlemen, when I talk about individuals, and I really, it's a mission to me to make sure that I am honestly and authentically trying to bring the best information as I can to you. In at least in the realm of what I know, and I know Howard knows this, but beyond knowing Howard as a colleague and as a friend, he is a mentor, and it is groundbreaking work that he is doing, particularly as I have mentioned earlier in some of the earlier broadcasts about the Psychophysiologic Disorders Association and that whole movement, to understand more about the mind-body connection. Howard is a leader in that, and beyond the leader in developing these programs, he has the science and the research to back it up. And that isn't always the case when we're looking at mind-body and some of, let's say, the non-traditional approaches to healing. So I thank you, Howard, for coming on the program, but more importantly, I thank you for the way that you've been able to add to this discipline and move it forward. To me, you are a hero and you are a mentor to me. And I really can't thank you enough for coming on the program and sharing some of your life experience and what you have done to help people with us today on The Healthy Mind.
You are too kind, Peter. Thank you so much. It's a privilege to be here. And I thank you for what you're doing, because you are a leader as well, and especially in bringing this work to so many people. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And hopefully you'll be coming on the program again.
I would love it.
Okay, we'd love that too. Thank you so much for coming on. And there he goes, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Howard Schubiner, the author of Unlearn Your Pain. Wow, how can you not be excited and motivated after hearing all that he had to say? Wow, just amazing. And it really just goes to show you the power that we have, the power that you have to bring about incredible change for the better in your life, whether it's something emotional or something physical, like pain and what we talked about today. Never, ever doubt how truly powerful you are. You have the power within you to make this incredible change in your life for the better. You really, really do. Now, you stuck it out with me today, and I really do appreciate it. It was a longer podcast, but we have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to listen to the program today. I really do appreciate it. Thank you again to Dr. Howard Schubiner for joining us this week on The Healthy Mind. If you have any questions, comments, criticisms, suggestions for a show, anything, send me an email. I want to hear from you. You can email me at peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. Please don't forget to visit the website at www.thehealthymind.com. I am always updating that with the latest health news that is out there. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Broadcasting Network, I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.